Good morning. As I was contemplating what to say this morning, I remembered something that occurred during my very first practice period at Tassajara. Sojin Mel Weitzman was the abbot who led the practice period, and Christina Lenhair, current abbess at City Center, was the eno at my first practice period. And there was a Shosan ceremony. For those of you who do not know, a Shosan ceremony is a very, very formal high church question and answer done in the meditation hall. One by one, the students come forward and stand on their knees in a posture called Choki, with their palms together, and ask their questions with their palms together in that posture. And the teacher is sitting on an ornate chair with full regalia. So it's supposed to be not your run-of-the-mill question and answer. You know, not, you know, supposed to be really to the point. And Christina came up and asked the question, what is the Dharma gate of Eno? What is the Dharma gate of being head of the meditation hall? Another way to phrase that might be, how does one practice the way as Eno, as head of the meditation hall? So the question, what is the Dharma gate of Eno? And Mel said, it doesn't depend upon being the Eno. And that was his answer to her question. And so that came to mind. And another little prefatory thing that came to mind, and I'm reconstructing this from memory, so it's may not, if you look it up, it may not be phrased exactly like this, but a new student or a traveling monk comes and meets the abbot of the temple for the first time, and this is, I think, in the Book of Serenity, I'm not sure. And the teacher says, well, what is your name? He says, I don't have a name. Oh, come on, you know, you gotta have a name. You know, what'd your mother call you? No name Benji. That's you calling no name Benji. And so I think there's a relationship between those two things. And I also want to speak briefly about one of my favorite Zen characters, Ryokan. Ryokan, Japanese Zen monk. I'm not much of a historian, but 1700s maybe, sometime after Dogen. And Ryokan was not a typical Japanese Soto Zen monk. After he completed his training with his teacher, rather than stay within the monastic system or become a teacher himself with disciples and starting a temple or inheriting a temple or continuing to support his teacher, you know, the various ways that the various career paths typically within Zen, he chose to become a hermit. In China, hermits, it's a common practice, but in Japan, it's not so common, but he chose to do it. And he's a beloved folk hero in Japan. He built himself a little hut, or inherited a hut, I'm not sure, on Mount Kugami, and would sit in that hut in Zazen, writing poetry, practicing calligraphy. Then he'd go down to the village and beg for food, takahatsu, and sometimes he wouldn't get much from begging because he'd get distracted playing games with the children. And so that, and So that was Ryokan. And there's one anecdote about Ryokan is that some monastery invited him to come teach. And I think it took some persuading to get him to actually come and give a talk at the temple. But he finally relented and did so and talked on Abhidharma, Buddhist psychology, you know, very complicated, abstruse material. And the anecdote reads that afterwards, the monks wanted to engage him in more conversation about it. No, I'm out of here. I did my bit. I'm gonna get back to my hut. So that's Ryokan. And one of his poems is, ever since my roof caved in, I have a much better view of the moon. So that's the poem. Ever since my roof caved in, blew off, I have a much better view of the moon. Zen literature, you know, usually has some sort of teaching in it. And it's not simply a nice idyllic scene of a bald-headed monk gazing at the moon in aesthetic pleasure. Moonlight almost always refers to awakening, to enlightenment. And so I think very much so in this poem that should be understood that the moon refers to some kind of realization. So what's the roof? My current feeling about the poem is that the roof represents what is commonly known, this is just one way of approaching it, as samskara. Samskara is mental formations. Mental formations, the concepts, the labels, the ideation that we use and can't not use in order to move through our world. If we didn't have samskaras, we would have a lot of traffic accidents because we wouldn't stop when we come to a red light. That's the mental formation. Red means stop. And so my proposal is that in this poem, ever since the roof blew off, ever since I became free of the blinding quality of samskaras, I can see more clearly. I can see who I am, actually. Having said, and I think, and if you go to the earlier comments about the Dharma gate of the Eno doesn't depend upon the Eno. Mel was trying to drive a point home that, you know, if you're walking around the Eno thinking, I am the Eno, you'll be very, very far from the way and you will not be a very effective Eno. If you had that samskara of, I've got this monastic role and that's how I practice the way, then we're estranged from the way. The way is basically free and untrammeled. It's not contingent upon practice or realization or being Eno. Any kind of ideation about what the way is would keep you from the way. And then no name, you know. Holding tightly to our identity robs us of our true life. That's a samskara. Our occupation, our relationships to our significant others, our education, all of these things are part of us. And we can't not have them. Just like we can't not put our, well, maybe we can, but we shouldn't not put our foot on the brake when we come to a red light. We can't not be affected and influenced by these various roles, these various concepts that are part of us. But perhaps on occasion, the wind will blow the roof off and we can get a glimpse of the moon. But not so easy to do. And so all of that stuff is a preamble to Case in the Blue Cliff Record. Case number 43, Dungshan's No Cold or Heat. A monk asked Dungshan, "When cold and heat come, how can we avoid them?" Dungshan said, "Why don't you go to the place where there is no cold or heat?" The monk said, "What is the place where there is no cold or heat?" Dungshan said, "When it is cold, the cold kills you. When it is hot, the heat kills you." So that's the case. So go to the place where there's no cold or heat. When it's hot, the heat kills you. When it's cold, the cold kills you. So this case is not about what to do if it's 95 degrees in the shade. This case is about what is the way when there's an impenetrable barrier. How to go forward when you can't go forward. What is the way when there's an irresolvable situation? Daido Lori Roshi says that this is exactly Shakyamuni's realization. The encounter, you know, he encountered the irresolvables of sickness, old age, death. How do you actually transcend suffering when it's inevitable? That's the burden of the case. What is the path of freedom from suffering when suffering is inevitable? It sounds like a contradiction, you know. Go where there's no heat. How do you do that? Well, you let the heat kill you. So that's the burden of the case, penetrating an impenetrable barrier. And later in the commentary, another story that is very connected to this. Didn't highlight. I got this fancy little device and I didn't make use of it. Hang on. Oh, here it is. So, this story, Zhao Shan asks the monk, "When it is so hot, where will you go to avoid it?" This monk said, "I'll avoid it inside a boiling cauldron, within the coals of a furnace." Shaoshan said, "How can it be avoided in a boiling cauldron or amongst the coals of a furnace?" The monk said, "Suffering doesn't reach there." So again, when it is so hot, where will you go to avoid it? When Taz Kanahashi was working on Dogen's extensive record, and this case is also in there. They basically feel that this is a way of saying, how you avoid heat, go to hell. that's where you can avoid heat, just go to hell. And how will you avoid it there? Suffering doesn't touch that place. And one other thing in this. So this will take a little unpacking, but this is embedded in the commentary. It says, eyes gazing at cloudy skies refers to on top of a 10,000 fathom peak. Head and face covered with ashes and dirt refers to the business of letting down a hand. So, eyes, you know, the 10,000 fathom peak is serene, peaceful realization. The 10,000 myriad things are all settled, and one is resting at peace. And head and face covered with ashes refers to the business of letting down a hand. That's getting into the muck and journeying suffering sentient beings. So those are the two images. And then he goes on to say, sometimes on top of a 10,000 fathom peak is head and faces covered with dirt. Sometimes head and faces covered in dirt is on top of a 10,000 fathom peak. In reality, going into inhabited areas to let down a hand and standing alone on a solitary peak are the same. Having returned to the source and comprehended nature, it is no different from discriminating intelligence. You must avoid understanding them as two parts, as separate things. So it's not a matter of indifference. It's not a matter of not being bugged by California being in a drought. It's not cultivating some detachment and dispassion where one is not affected by the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. That's not what this case is. That's not being killed by heat. That's being immune to heat. It doesn't mean you don't sweat or you don't shiver. It means that the person who thinks they shouldn't have to sweat dies. Means that the person who thinks they shouldn't have to shiver dies. It kills you. You accept. You may not enjoy it, but you accept. That kind of entering into that kind of crucible can create the conditions for the roof to blow off. If there were no struggle, if there were no wrestling with the suffering inherent in conditioned experience and the ideations of some scars, then there would be no ability to see beyond them. At least that's how I'm feeling nowadays. As many of you already know, the past couple months for me have been very challenging. Probably I have to go back to when I was in college to find a time that was more difficult for me than the past couple months, so decades ago. And it's interesting to see that my samskaras that have been blown away. And I want to reiterate that samskaras are not bad. They're inevitable. You know, they're part of the five constituents of what we actually are. Form, feeling, perceptions, formations, consciousness. That fourth one, formations, that's the samskaras. And that's who we actually are. So it's an inherent thing. Now, if we stick to the samskara and think that's who we really are, I really am Benji, or I really need to be the Eno in order to practice the way, then we've got a problem. Then we've got a roof that's obscuring the moon. Samskaras, you know, they flow, they can flow. But when we grab onto and think that's really true, that person really is a jerk. Or I really am this, that, the other thing, then the moon's obscured. So my new year started with losing my job. Along with losing my job, I lost my title as mission director of the Homeless Services Center in Salinas. I lost my role as pastor to the homeless folks on the street. And so I lost a name. I lost an identity. And there's been a continent, so it's been sometimes kind of hot, you know. And the serene contemplation of the source is not undiscriminating awareness. It kind of hurt to lose that role, to lose that identity. It hurts. And sometimes that hurt would manifest as feeling of a failure. If I'd been a better pastor, I would have been valued more by the organization, and my position would have been eliminated. Sometimes it would manifest as anger. You know, if the organization appreciated the importance of pastoral work with the homeless, they wouldn't have eliminated the position. You know, they don't realize how important it is to offer a spiritual perspective. And so there's grabbing onto that roof, you know. And then I have many friends who support that samskara as the truth. You know, they are not so pleased with the direction the organization's going in. I am not either. I can, you know, I still have that samskara. I'm trying to hold it somewhat lightly and say, you know, not every homeless services center has to have a spiritual component. But there is that samskara. There is the pain of that. And then when my friends support that, then that fiery, angry heat gets a little hotter. But contemplation of the source is not separate from discriminating awareness. Feeling the pain. In this period of my life, it's very acute. I can feel the pain of some samskaras when I attach to them pretty acutely. And then that gives me a visceral feeling for what they are, what they do, the power they have over our vision, if we allow them to have it. And it's an impenetrable barrier. I can't hang on to them. I can't. Circumstances won't permit me to continue to think of myself as the person I was 3 months ago. That person is deconstructing before my very eyes. And if I were to pretend that that didn't hurt, then I would be elaborately, carefully constructing a new roof, another samskara, to hide from the heat of feeling all of this. So my best sense right now is I'm beginning to appreciate that the roof is blowing off. And I have found myself saying to myself and to friends that I've, you know, met with that, that this is an opportunity, you know, a tremendous opportunity. And sometimes I've said that, you know, I have an opportunity to reinvent myself. That was one thing. And then that didn't sit so well. And then later I refined that to say, well, I have an opportunity to recreate myself. So it's less arbitrary. No. And that's okay. You know, I will. You know, inevitably, certain circumstances are going to present me some scars. And in order to function, whatever context that I have to function in, I'm going to have to employ those some scars. And so it's all right to playfully consider, well, what kind of role can I enter into that will serve me well and serve others well. But that's still not looking up and seeing no roof whatsoever. So I think there's, you know, so those are legitimate opportunities, but they're kind of conventional, provisional, relative opportunities. They're not the absolute opportunity. You know, who am I independent of those roles, of some scars? And it's all in the seeking. It's all in the questioning, because, you know, you can't really find that. But if you're not asking that question, then you think all you are is the role. All you are is the samskara. All you are is a mother or a father, or all you are is a lawyer or a nurse. And you don't see No Name Benji. You don't see the unconditioned nature of things. And so, and I have a little hint of a way that I might try to explore this. Great Zen master Steeda Ray Vaughan taught me this. I was reminded me of this, because I've said this before. He was being interviewed and he said that, well, since I can't read music, I find that it's very important for me not to worry about where I am on the neck or to think about what I should play next, but to trust my heart and let my heart and slow things down and just let my heart go where it wants to go. And, you know, since I love playing guitar, I found that very encouraging. And I know that music happens best when I don't do it, but I receive it. And even when I'm doing technical exercises, if I'm not trying to receive some sort of expression, then it's not art, and it's useless, really. So receiving that and letting it flow through is very important. And that when I was thinking of that, that reminded me of something that I have said and have tried to practice. In my work that I used to have in Salinas, is, you know, it's a very chaotic environment, you know, with, you know, severely drug addicted people and very, very beaten up people, you know, and then one of the day room staff persons asked me, you know, how to stay grounded in such an unpredictable environment. And I shared within the Zen image of a pearl rolling with no obstruction in a bowl. Take that bowl and you do this, and the pearl just rolls wherever, responds instantly and rolls whichever way it needs to without any sticking. And so to be able to be flexible and free to respond to circumstances as they arise. And I said that in our environment at Dorothy's, that can be very scary to try to do because, one person comes up with this request when you're talking to them, another person comes up and it's really hard to stay that flexible, that loose. And I said that the way that I have found that sometimes seems to help, because this person is also a Buddhist practitioner, I say, is to stay grounded in vow. Stay grounded in vow and place yourself at the mercy of sentient beings. Stay grounded in vow and place yourself at the mercy of circumstance. And then I use that Zen image of the pearl moving unobstructedly in the bowl as a metaphor for what that might feel like. So I offer that. Stay grounded in vow. Forget about who you are, who you think you are. And be available to serve. Which kind of reminds me of part of my process with the past couple of months is at first, when I first got the news, I was in a state of being that I think would be best called freaked out. Oh my God, no. What's going to happen to me? How am I going to have, income, I need to find a job. And so I was in that state of mind that, I'm going to have to figure out what my next job is going to be. And that felt so constricting. So constricting. But then I thought, I need to find a new way to serve. And that felt very light. There's so many ways to serve sentient beings. Some sentient beings are so old they can no longer wipe their own butts. Before I came to the Zen Center, that's what I did for a living. And I loved it. It's something, I felt there was something very noble about helping a person eat and bathe themselves, or bathe when they couldn't. And so, I could serve that way. I could get recertified as a nurse assistant. I'm still strong enough to do it. Or there may be other ways. And so that helped to go from me, I got to get a job or I'm going to end up on the street myself, to, okay, I need to find a new way to serve. And then there was a shift. It felt more expansive. There's so much need that a heart that is open and available to respond will surely be asked to do something. So stay grounded in Tao. And place yourself at the mercy of circumstance. Sounds kind of like Shantideva, you know. If sentient beings need a tree, I'll be a tree. If they need a physician, I'll be a physician. If they need a plumber, I'll be a plumber. If they need a butt wiper, I'll be a butt wiper. I don't think he actually said that. So, if it gets hot, go to the place where there is no heat. Let the one who doesn't want to feel the heat die. And let the heat blow the roof off. And in your desolation, look, who are you really? Now that your cherished notions of who you are have been blessedly stripped from you, who are you really? Any answers? So I could have any questions, so I could have any answers.
That's what they said, Gertrude Stein, you know the poet?
Yeah.
The poetess, on her deathbed, somebody said, what is the answer? And she said, what is the question?
Oh, just so you know, I'll be entering into residence at Green Gulch for a period of time, so I won't end up on the street. And so I'll have a base of operations to contemplate how next to serve. And that will keep me closer to Mountain Source, make it less driving. And so we shall see. Any conversation? Anything come up for anybody?
Oh, no.
No, you never have anything to say.
No. Well, I mean, it's like, gets to the heart of things, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. We all get to a point sooner or later where what we've always thought we are is eroding, or eroded suddenly, as in your case. And I think that's why we kind of respond to disasters, because, you know, the Philippines, those roofs all blew off.
Sorry?
In the Philippines,
yeah,
the roofs all blew off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, then people had to find out how to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
What happens in most of our lives, at least for me, is that it's not quite as dramatic usually, but
yeah,
it's recurrent. It's been, I think I've said that to you before, it's recurrent in my mind. So what do I do now? And I really appreciated the idea that, you know, pretending that it's okay or it's just another opportunity or is a kind of cover story.
Yeah.
You know, we're deeply affected by these things. We can't help but be deeply affected by them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. one of the people who walked on the moon called it magnificent desolation or something like that. Mm-hmm. Is that the phrase? Or something desolation, but you know, magnificent or wondrous or beautiful desolation.
Point that occurs to me, I do volunteer work, hospice and stuff, and I find it's impossible to help if I think I'm helping.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same kind of
thing. Yeah.
And yeah, I'm sort of rededicating my life to service, but even service is a dangerous word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Lots of ramifications. Well, I'm serving, I must have something to give.
Yeah, another roof to put over your hut, another son's car.
You know, the roof is always a reappearing.
Yeah.
Moment to moment.
And yeah. If
you really practice the way we're trying to practice every moment,
mm-hmm.
there's a little leaf coming
yeah.
up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Great realization of delusion.
Yeah. And people who need help really also don't want to feel like they're being helped. You know,
mm-hmm.
I remember I was training
yeah.
for a hospice, and they said the last thing you want to do is go in there like you're going to help someone die.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you don't really, it's funny, and that's why we have to practice, because you don't really get, you can go to a training, but you don't get it to be right in the room with someone dying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Back in the day when I was mission director, you know, when I would orient people or when I would speak to the college students who would visit, I would say that we're here to learn more than to serve. And I think it was Mother Teresa, you know, somebody asked her, come on now, this work you're doing with the poor in Calcutta, it's not really all that selfless, is it? And she said, no, it's very, very selfish. I'm trying to work out my own salvation in service to these people. And so, you know, I think that's the antidote, you know, that in order to actually, for our own, you know, like I was saying, for me to feel whole, I need to serve. But if I serve thinking I'm helping them, then I'm not, it's not going to make me whole. You know, if I enter the situation, what can I learn, you know, from this person and from this situation? Then the toxicity of thinking that we're actually helping is minimized anyway.
Yeah, I mean, my experience with people right at the end of their life is you sometimes really totally lose a sense of self and other completely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Stephen's not in the room with Vivian, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We were there. And then the reality sort of takes over the situation, almost an undifferentiated truth, which
mm-hmm.
you might call death at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And that is learning how to be, and that's why I think why we said Zazen, how to be intimate with reality.
Yeah.
You know, and that, for me, service is a way, even more than my Zen practice in a way,
mm-hmm.
to be that intimate with raw reality, which is suffering.
Yeah.
It's being, if someone's dying, you're in the hot coals, as
yeah.
you said.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, when you're speaking about, you know, being intimate with reality and that, you know, self and other kind of drop away, when I was contemplating that teaching of Stevie Ray Vaughan's about, you know, how he prefers to play guitar, you know, just to trust his heart and not to try to think about what to do, I was trying to imagine, well, what, how to actually be in each moment that way, where you trust your heart to just, well, it's like be at the mercy of the circumstances and let them play you, let them move you. Trust your heart enough to be totally like that pearl in a bowl, just totally moved by things.
It's funny, I'm not a musician, but when you said that, how better to be in a moment-to-moment thing to realize it's one note and then another note, mm-hmm. in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But you don't want to make a mistake.
Wow.
As a musician, that's a certain frame of mind that tends to produce mistakes. Thinking, I don't want to make a mistake. If you get a frame of mind where there's no such thing as a mistake, then you're not caught by the unintended music. And and jazz musicians are, there's tales, they'll be playing and they'll hit a clam, and then they'll riff on the clam, the wrong note, and they'll turn that wrong note into music, and so that your statement illustrates the thinking that gets in the way of that, and in performance when I'm in the groove, so to speak. And there's a finger slip. If I start to think about it, it leads to another one. But if I just keep let it go, and not let the mind stick to that, then there's less of a disruption.
Isn't it kind of related to being a perfectionist? I mean, I lived with a perfectionistic musician for 20 years.
Yeah.
Agonized.
Mm-hmm.
Just agonized.
Yeah.
And was very shy and performed, and taught stuff. But I thought of the word intimate when koan that she brought up, like going to where there is no hot or cold. I mean, it's to go into the coals and then be intimate with the suffering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also, I didn't realize that you weren't. I didn't know about your circumstances.
Yeah.
So this is fresh. Was that I was thinking about Vimalakirti and the lay practice and how many times, like a cab driver or somebody who works at Subway or something, can be like in Tigan's book about the Bodhisattva, lay Pete Seeger.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely a bodhisattva. Just that, my life has been dramatically, falling away of identities, and I've been maybe about to take a $10 an hour job, but I haven't had a car to get there. So, good luck. You can be. I hate it when people say, "Be grateful you have Green Gulch," but you are lucky to have it. Friends, close friends, and a place to stay. There's a lot of people I know don't have a place to stay, as you know, what it's like. So I'm sure. Oh, I know that was the other thing I wanted to say was, isn't the symbol the writing the word for in Chinese for crisis the same as opportunity?
Danger
and crisis.
Danger and opportunity.
Oh, yeah, I've heard it said crisis.
Yeah, I've heard.
Danger.
I've heard both ways.
Yeah.
But
it doesn't make it any
easier. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just to riff on what you're saying, each moment is a crisis.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In reality, the roof is always being blown off. And we.
I heard that poem someone at the center sent me when John looked up was the barns burned down, now I can see the moon. It was like in English, but is that, and it was real time, so I guess that was just the barns burned down, now I can see the moon.
Yeah, I hadn't heard it that way.
Yeah.
Yes.
I wonder if we could go around the circle and everyone can introduce themselves and say a little bit about themselves or some new people here.
Okay. Well, my name is Rick, and I've already said enough about myself.
I'm Janine, and I live here. I think I recognize you.
Steve,
I used to come here once, yeah.
Yeah, I was sort of a founding member of Mountain Source.
Absolutely.
So I was studying with Taiyan, and he said, he had a group in San Francisco, one in Bolinas, and San Rafael, and I said, why don't you put them together in one song? But, no, he said. But we kept talking, and at that time, this was many years ago, like 1999, he didn't have enough money, and he was going to leave and all that. And I said, why don't you do this? So he finally said, okay, write a letter to some of my students in the city. And I got a Nobel Press Club made into the 501c3. I was president. And
do you have a bookstore?
Yeah, bookstore.
Yeah, I think we all used your bookstore one time, right?
Yeah.
Not on Fillmore Street.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I think we all visited your bookstore one time.
Yeah. So it's great coming. It's been a long time. I'm like, practices.
And your wife?
Yeah, Miriam, yeah. She wants to come today, but yeah. I can't recognize her. Yeah.
So it's been many years.
Yeah, well, Tigan's, happily in Chicago.
Yeah. I'm Martha, and I live here in Bolinas, and I practiced at Zen Center since 1991 and did a lot of practice periods there and retreats, and just I used to drive to go sit in the morning from here. It was exactly a half hour from my often second period, but quite often first, and then I did three practice periods at Tulsa Heart. But anyway, I haven't been involved with Zen Center for about the last 7 years, but recently, very recently, went back to and got to spend a little time. So, and I very much miss the Sangha, experience. There or somewhere. That's the hardest part for me.
So. I'm Larry, and I'm Williams.
I live in San Francisco. I come up here about twice a week to go surfing. Sorry. Well, those guys with the trucks, that's
hard. Oh,
it's
not.
I went to San Francisco and then went back on Wednesday. And I went on Wednesday because I planned to come today. And there was a big party planned for last night, so I said I probably wasn't going to want to wake up early. But I skipped it and did it anyway. It's not a great idea. I'm glad I did. I'm going to go surfing after again.
Great.
I mean, long story short, I've kind of always been a little bit of a, I've been a prick in the past, anyway, so I've been a bit of a prick in the past, so I've decided that the last eight months ago, I was just going to make kind of a year of just kind of trying everything, trying new stuff. Saying yes to everything, especially things that I'm compulsively want to say no to, which has been really cool. So this has been a long moment. It's been super fun. So yeah.
Sounds like you have an opportunity to reinvent yourself.
Yeah, I mean it's been a pretty fascinating about 6 months or so. I just started saying yes to stuff, especially when I really wanted to say no. And I was reading. I'm not the kind of person that, a year ago would have been into this sort of thing, but I was in Green Apple Books reading Ram Dass.
All right.
Which I heard about, I didn't know anything about Be Here Now, and I was reading it in the bookstore, so it's too cheap to buy it. I'm sorry. Dude, this is something you said probably deal with a lot. I was sitting in Green Apple Bookstore on the second floor, and I saw the poster view on the wall. I took a picture of it, and a little reminder said, make sure you go check this out. Here I am.
But, so are you new to sitting practice?
Yeah, Wednesday was the first time. Yeah.
Yeah.
I tried.
I didn't make it the first.
I had a whole thing to do with the leg crossing on Wednesday.
But we navigated that.
That's really a shame. I've been doing yoga 5 days a week for 4 months now. Yeah. I can't do it. Yeah. I can't sit.
But Rory, your comment about how, you know, you've been a prick in the past reminded me of something real quickly. You know, when I was in junior high school, I was bullied a lot. You know, and one day I went to a new school, and it was between periods, and this guy walks up to me, and he says, "Hey, remember me?" And oh my God, it was one of the guys that was tormenting me in another school. I said, "Yeah. Yeah, I was a real asshole, wasn't I?" And he turned and walked away. So the provisional reinventing yourself is not a bad thing, you know. The moon, it's not the moon, but it's not a bad thing. I don't know what your prickosity was, and you don't have to tell us.
I'm not a mean guy or anything. I wasn't a bully or anything like that. I'm too small anyway, but. No, I was an angry person. And that, you know, came to identify. That's what I gave up to everybody around me. So, I've just been trying all sorts of new stuff and just kind of straying from the ordinary. And it's scary, but, I had a piece I was going to say, but I don't want to interrupt the introduction part. But basically, it's like, the thing you're saying about the roof. Lately, I've been dealing with the idea of safety, and that safety is not really necessarily a good thing, at least for me. So when the roof's on, you can't see the moon, which is obviously the most valuable experience you'd be having in that situation. The thing that keeps you warm and not getting rained on is the thing that's kind of blinding you from what you're trying to see.
Yeah.
And right now I'm living in a city with a lot of 20-somethings, and everyone's in the tech industry or this or that, and they're all, they work, 12, 14 hours a day, and they hate their jobs, and they're in a relationship with people they don't like, and they're, they make lots of money, but they don't have any money, and I work freelance now. I quit all the jobs that were making me angry and sad, and I saw a lot of people that I worked with that were not who I wanted to be someday, and so I just tried to cherry pick what the lessons could be. I'm sorry, and so I quit everything. I just work in the work I like to do freelance now, and it's not terribly fruitful, but I'm really pretty happy. And so it's that idea that now I have no safety. I mean, I got a flat tire this week. It's like, I gotta find a way to get my tire fixed. And before, I'd have the money for it, and I'd just wait until that's the first time I did it. And it's like, I gotta wait until that check from that last gate comes in, and I'll take the spare off. But it's nice to, it's for the first time in my life, that doesn't bother me. Mm-hmm. Or like if I can't use the car, then I'll just walk. Borrow a bicycle, or I'll do something else. So the idea of anything can just go away at any moment is actually comforting. It doesn't hinder me anymore.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like you've been sitting more than once.
I'm
free. Well, surfing's a form.
I'm free. That's like a lot of free time. I'm a cinematographer. I'm working my way into wildlife cinematography. So I'm going to Bristol, England in May to see if I can make my way into natural history and at BBC.
Say England? Going to England?
Yeah. Well, I'm killing a couple birds with farm shows. The worst analogy to use in this situation. I said killing many birds with one stone, which I just like appreciate the unnecessary. I'm going to Ireland for my cousin's wedding, and I'm going to go to England and try and get a job
I'm Patty, and I'm a long-time participant in the Sangha in Green Gulch, and coordinator for Mount Source here, Larry. I just finished a three-week practice period at Green Gulch. It's an intensive, it was very intense. It was difficult for me. It's always difficult for me. Meditation doesn't come easily. Facing my conditioning, my imperfection, my self difficulties with self.
In other words, she's an exemplary Zen student, among the very best, because she's one of the worst.
Yes. But for the last several years, I've been working. I've been loving versus working. Loving the practice of bringing kindness to my own difficulties in each moment. Or in any situation. And it has been a great
Stephen, I guess my story already came out. I started tithing, I'm still in contact with tithing, and I was ordained a priest about 2.5 years ago, and now I find myself, I have a small Zen sitting group on Mondays and meet at church and in my bookstore.
You're the last Zen.
Oh, I was ordained a priest in the Katagiri Limited Church in 2011. And since then I have a small sitting group, we meet in the church near my bookstore. It's small, anywhere between 2 and 6 or 7 people. But I find myself without a sangha like this, and so I said, you know, Mount Source, it's sort of where I started, in a way, and so here I am, on the bookstore, and my deep interest now is I've been doing hospice work at Zen Hospice, and then I've moved to Maitri, so I also deal with a lot of people who, you know, everyone there has AIDS, but a lot of them are just there for respite care. They used to all die, and now most of them, they go to the hospital, they get better, come back, go to some SRO and come back. Mm-hmm. So I have expanded. I love hospice work per se, and I do get that at my church. A lot of it's working with homeless people and just, you know, being their buddy and watching TV with them or whatever they want to do. And just 2 days ago, I was accepted into an interfaith chaplaincy program in Berkeley, which seems to be the next step. So I'll be starting school, and they have a special transfer of ordination. I can still keep my priest, my Zen ordination, so I'll be a dual ordainer, whatever. But my real interest is in I've had a very unusual spiritual path. That I was a Russian Orthodox Christian for about 10 years, and I grew up Jewish, and so when I applied, I sort of said, I'm sort of an interfaith person. And they really respect it. Some people look at it as kind of weird, but that's just my story. And so I'm really looking forward into the interfaith community and just helping, you know, people.
I was a Jesus freak in the 70s.
Okay.
And then when I couldn't abide that anymore, I actually went through what's called Garut. I converted to Judaism because I thought maybe I could that be closer to Jesus that way.
Didn't work, huh?
Yeah. Well, the only synagogue in town was a Reformed temple, and I wanted to practice Judaism anyway. No, it didn't work. And now you're right. So I feel I'm very much an interfaith kind of person.
Yeah, I picked that up from the website, and I was like, I need to meet you. And I spoke to Yeah, I've done Tibetan Buddhism pretty seriously, and I love the Zen, the differences between Zen and Tibet, the more in the world, the more iconoclastic, and a little freer. So I'm just happy to be back. It was so funny, like driving here, and I started remembering, oh yeah, I remember that place and that place, and you know, then seeing from my face, so it really feels like, you know, so that's what I thank everybody for being here.
My name is Pam, and I'm here. I'm not feeling very talkative today, but I'm grateful to be here. Once a month doesn't feel like a lot to me. It doesn't feel like enough. I need a sangha that's. I just find from my own practice. I just spent. I'm at the tail end of the flu after about 2 weeks. And a lot of sleep, just a lot of sleep. And I think I got kind of lost in that. You know, rather than using it as a time to, like, practice even, lying in bed, I just... I feel kind of sad about... really utilizing that. I started out the year just feeling so happy and so up and ready, and I am for 2014. But this time of being in bed and looking outside and seeing the beautiful days and listening to the birds and everything, I found myself crying for life and for the place in which we find ourselves now, for the beauty, for the preciousness, for the circumstances, you know, in which we find ourselves. So anyway, and I want to be gentle with myself because I know this is a kind of you know, they're the dips. So it's okay, and I appreciate the honesty in the circle here, and all of our journeys. The sharing here to me is a teaching that just stays with me, and it stays with me. Sometimes I go home and I write notes after being here. Sometimes I post things that have been said that really are reminders to me. So. I just really am. I'm grateful to everyone in this sangha. This is really quite a wonderful sangha. And of course, not everyone is here today, but it's a wonderful place to be. And I'm glad you're going to be closer.
Yeah. And
I'm really glad.
And Pam, when you said that once a month is not enough, I don't know what the future holds, of course, but I just blurted out to Patty today that I fantasize about living in Bolinas, you know, and wondering if there's a way to actually pull that off somehow, you know.
But find out, tell me.
What's that? If I find out, tell you. Yeah. But then, you know.
Yeah.
But I know that this is a different Saturday than other Saturdays, I guess. I know that Bolinas is some, as a community, is somewhat xenophobic.
No, but that's not true.
But that's not true. Plus, I got all of you, right?
It's not true. No, that's just the rejection of it.
It's a reputation.
But
there are some people who are that way.
Yeah,
you can't make a generalization.
But that's a digression. I most likely will be probably this side of the bridge in Marin County someplace, you know, once I do leave Green Gulch. And I'll be at Green Gulch by the end of this month, probably. And we might be able to make use of that somehow. And your comment on the sharing reminded me that last month we met and we talked about having an event after lunch. Not today. And we were thinking of starting next month, but next month I believe is a board meeting. Scheduled. So, but So on the months that don't have a board meeting, which is, you know, every quarter, the thought is to have to, you know, have a lunch together, you know, go to the food co-op or bring things, and we just have an informal lunch. And then afterwards, those who can stay, and we know that not everybody can make the time commitment, but those who can stay for longer, we come back in, sit a short period of zazen, and then have a kalanamitta gathering, a friendship, good spiritual friend gathering, where we actually just talk about our practice, our life, our journey, you know, together. And so that's, and I'm going to write something up about that and send that out in an email. But that's one way that this will be expanding already. And then my closer proximity might also offer notions. You know, I have to figure out what, you know, first I have to land at Green Gulch and get into the rhythm there and figure out what my schedule will be like there. But then we will see. Might be able to do something more frequently than once a month. If not in this space, there might be some other space that could be made available to us. Ah, please.
And I'm Carol, and I too fantasize about living in Bolinas. And one of the samskaric ways that I'm helping that to happen is I'm the new priest in charge here at St. Aidan's. So I'm actually in a position to help some of these dreams come to pass. In my other life, because it's very part-time to be the vicar at St. Aidan's, I am the chaplain at St. Paul's Episcopal School in Oakland. And that is a very diverse and very interfaith community. And as a newly ordained Episcopal priest, the first thing that I had to do was go and sit in other people's faith traditions. And that included, because the school was very Buddhist at the time, they were quite Tibetan Buddhist, I sat with Sei Chen Ling Center for 2 years just to kind of learn what the practice was all about. And I've continued to meditate very badly. I'm a terrible meditator. But I think...
A.K.A. one of the best meditators.
Right. It's a struggle, and I teach it to children. Because the dear little ones talk about being forced into being things that they may or may not be. And children, particularly in independent schools, have almost no opportunity to just be. And so meditation for them to sit even for 10 minutes is like torture. But they ask me for more because their hearts know that this is a good thing. And when I came to St. Aidan's and learned that there was a Zazen group here, I thought, well, I'm going to come. And thank you for sharing all about my life. I very much needed to hear about the roof being blown off and about all those attachments, because right now in my job, working at this school is so stressful. It's not the colds, because I haven't completely died to it, but I feel hot all the time. And I've been stewing about getting no recognition at the school for this work that I do so well that people around the world have wanted to work with me and what I do. And all they do is tell me what I do badly. Day and night, you haven't done enough. You haven't done what you're supposed to do. And this week, I thought I was just going to pop. And so I thank you deeply for blowing off my roof so that I can see a little bit of the moon.
Oh, thank you.
They have a children's program, once a month at Green Gulch.
Mm-hmm.
As part of the Sunday program. That's really sweet.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm.
I take my 8th grade to Green Gulch every spring.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Well, that's cool. So you're currently living in East Bay?
No, I live in San Anselmo.
Oh, so you go both directions.
Yes, yes. And this is a far nicer drive. But I'm getting on in years, and I realize that I can be this active a while longer. But the role of the elder is to be contemplative. Mm-hmm. And much of my spiritual work has been in Alaska, because the natural world and the sentient being, the non-human sentient beings, mm-hmm. matter so deeply to me. Mm-hmm. And so as I was thinking about where I want to be contemplative, I can't go to Alaska because my husband is terrified of the cold. But I can come here. And all of the good things are here.
Oh my goodness, it's almost service time. Mm-hmm. But thank you, Patty, for recommending we do this. I really glad we took the time. But normally we will do this after lunch, this kind of thing after lunch.